Hello and welcome to the Bloomington Pantograph on Monday, June 4th. This is Susan Over. We will begin this section with Fire Destroys Bloomington Home. A fire destroyed a home on Bloomington's west side late yesterday afternoon. Firefighters were called to 109 Constantine in Bloomington at 4:27 p.m. for a report of smoke and flames coming from the single-family residence. When firefighters arrived, the home was fully engulfed. However, all occupants had apparently escaped the residence. There were no immediate reports of injuries. Firefighters from Bloomington Township, Downs, Hayworth, and the City of Bloomington were called to the scene. The fire, aided by a slight wind, was fully engulfed as firefighters arrived. Despite heavy smoke, neighbors from around the area watched as firefighters fought the fire. Quote, "I've never seen so much smoke before," said Deb Stoneman, who said she lived a few blocks away. "This whole side of town is going to smell like smoke for a few days. A lot of people had their windows open today." Officials said the house was most likely a total loss, but an official determination and cause had not yet been determined. Firefighters were also called to a barn on fire near Hayworth at about 5:40 p.m. yesterday, but information was not available. There were no injuries reported. End of article. Normal to award reduced grants. A reduced budget made competition even stiffer for this year's Harmon Grants of Grant. I'm sorry, for Harmon Arts Grants. Those grants supporting art programs in Normal from recognized not-for-profit organizations were cut in half to $25,000 in the town's new spending plan, but interest stayed high, with 28 applications totaling $74,297 requested. In 2017, 30 applications requested $90,067. Quote, "It was really difficult because there is such a need in the community," said City Manager Pam Reese of those grants. End quote. To be approved by Normal City Council tonight and awarded at the June 18th Council meeting. Reese Mayor Chris Coos, former Mayor Paul Harmon, who started the program, and Interim Assistant Manager Terry Legner chose the winners. Reese thanked Prairie Community Foundation for funding some programs that the town is not able to. That foundation is distributing $157,347 to 73 programs in McLean, DeWitt, Livingston, and Logan counties. Thanks to donors, endowments, and the Jerome Mirza Foundation, every returning Harmon recipient is slated to get equal or less money for 2018, and total recipients drop from 23 to 18. New recipients include Community Players Theater and Illinois State University's Midwest Institute of Opera, ISU's Concerts on the Quad and String Project, Penguin Project, Seedling Theater, and Share the Music. Left the list of recipients. The council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight on the fourth floor at Uptown Station. In other business, the council will consider the town's plan to spend community development block grant funding, federal money for local work from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The town plans to spend $224,000 on streets and sidewalks, $68,000 on sewers, $62,000 on youth education and family activities at Unity Community Center, and homeless outreach through PATH, providing access to help, and $24,000 on down payments assistance to home buyers. It will also consider a $66,863 project with Champaign Signal and Lighting Company to replace traffic signals at the intersection of West Beaufort and West Vernon Avenue. Public Works Director Wayne Aldridge said there will be no closures necessary for the work to be completed this summer or fall. And last, to tour White Oak Villas, a new housing complex at 1000 South Cottage Avenue. End of article. Car show lifts spirits of local enthusiasts. Bloomington. Wesley Garrard had no intention of lifting the rear end of a car up off the ground at Sunday's Champaign British Car Festival at the David Davis Mansion in Bloomington. but Alan Wagner convinced him quickly he would have no problem lifting his 1959 Berkeley on the final day of the three-day festival. After grabbing a pair of grips attached to each bumper, Garrard lifted the back end off the ground and even had enough strength to hold a smile and laugh. Quote, "Behold the strongest man in the world," Wagner said of Garrard, with the car tires about 1 foot off the ground. "That was unreal," Garrard said. "I didn't think I could do that." End quote. Garrard wasn't the only one with such feats of strength, Wagner said. David Fitch of Normal didn't have as far to drive, but he still loves the show. He was there with his 1952 MG TD. This year's featured car was the Mini Cooper, and among those showing off his 1985 Mini Classic was Frank Swearingen of Washington. Not everyone there had a car. Bill Crow of Bloomington just turned 18 and just wants to get a used car to call his own for now, but in the future he would not mind having one of the cars that were featured at the show. He said it had to be a convertible. George Fallon of Springfield was in town only because of the annual car show. End of article. Area calendar. Registration, Murder Mystery Night, 5:30 until 8 p.m. on July 13th, which is a Friday, at the Normal Public Library. It is for ages 12 till 18. Registration is required. You can be in contact through normalpl.org. Registration, International Snack Food Taste Test, 3 o'clock until 4:30 p.m. on July 24th, which is a Tuesday, Normal Public Library. It is again for ages 12 to 18. Registration is required. You may contact the Normal Public Library at normalpl.org. End of article. Area Townships, Defense Services, and Tax Support. Bloomington. Don Newby has no doubt what will happen if Randolph Township government ceases to exist. Quote, "It would just fall to pieces," he said of services offered by the township in and around Hayworth, where he is township supervisor. "That would be terrible for the community," end quote. But with rising property taxes and ballooning state debt, a statewide push to eliminate layers of local government has gained momentum, including state legislation to make consolidation more feasible, though two such measures failed to pass the General Assembly in the session which ended last week. Proponents of consolidation, including Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, have noted that Illinois is home to more units of government than any other state, nearly 7,000 overall, despite having only the sixth highest population in the country. Quote, "Illinois needs to rise up for air, and residents need to be able to keep their money rather than turn it over to multiple forms of government," end quote, said Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Sanguinetti. The way township officials view it, though, there is no guarantee getting rid of their units of government will do anything more than shift existing costs onto already cash-strapped counties and cities. Quote, "I'm not hearing a lot of counties crying out they want more responsibilities and duties," said Brian Smith, Executive Director of Township Officials of Illinois and a Macon County Board member. "Will the county be able to save money and do it for cheaper? We just do not know. It sounds good, but the bottom line is it actually going to happen?" I hope that part of the consolidation discussion includes serious consideration to an objective cost-benefit analysis, said City of Bloomington Township Supervisor Deb Skillroot. Local township employees told the Pantograph their services are delivered efficiently and are important enough to keep. While Illinois' more than 1,400 townships all do general assistance for low-income residents, property tax assessments, and road maintenance, Skillroot and Normal Township Supervisor Sarah Grammer noted they go far beyond. After a full year of studying the township's programs and services along with its budget, I was amazed at the significant positive impact we provide to the community on such limited funding. End quote. City of Bloomington Township's $3.6 million budget supports John M. Scott Health Resource Center and the Evergreen Memorial Cemetery, in addition to property assessments and road maintenance. That budget has stayed relatively consistent over the last 4 years. The township manages all aspects of the cemetery, one of Bloomington Normal's largest, as Randolph Township does for 6 cemeteries in and around Hayworth. Newby says he doubts if those services would be picked up in the township government being dissolved. The city township operates with minimal full-time staff. It is supplemented by part-time and seasonal staff. These efforts keep personnel costs low. Cooperative efforts have resulted in efficient service provision and no duplication of services. Examples would be the township building, which was built on land donated by the city, and a senior citizen grant to Normal Township's Activity and Recreation Center. Normal Township has a $4 million budget, which supports one of the highest quality senior centers in the country. I'll agree with that. Serving all of McLean County and beyond, with over 4,200 active members, said Grammer, and growing general and emergency assistance programs, plus roads and assessments. The township's budget has gone down each of the past 2 years, despite its new senior center and more assistance payments, from 559 payments for $142,943 in 2015 to 689 for $219,991 in 2017. That is because the township is a model of good fiscal management, despite a small staff and board. With the county, the town, and state all struggling to balance budgets, there is no way consolidating township services into one of those entities would save tax dollars. Consolidation would most likely result in elimination of the important services the township provides. Randolph Township's current budget is about $1 million. Data for previous years was not available. Newby said that includes about $25,000 for assistance for up to 30 to 35 residents each year. We are servicing people who have absolutely nothing. They will fall through the cracks if it weren't for townships, said Decatur Township Supervisor Lisa Stanley. The idea of locals looking after themselves has always been the purpose of discussions about consolidation, said Sanguinetti. Her local government consolidation and unfunded mandates task force and the proposed legislation were intended to strengthen the ability for communities to push for consolidating, merging, or discontinuing whatever local forms of government they see as unnecessary. Task force recommendations included a 4-year moratorium on creating new local governments, new local units of governments, for allowing local residents to consolidate or to dissolve local units of governments via referendum, and allowing all townships in the state to consolidate with municipalities they share boundaries with via referendum. Sanguinetti said the purpose of the task force was to alleviate hurdles so local government could decide what it could do with and what it could do without. End of article. Steampunk back in Bloomington Normal. Downtown Gathering grows for a second year. Fantasy, history, and future collided in downtown Bloomington on Saturday. For the second year, Cogs and Corsets, a Central Illinois steampunk happening, attracted hundreds of fans of the steampunk style from across the country. Steampunk is a subgenre of science fiction which twists the Victorian aesthetic with an alternate history, said Kathy Sutliff of Bloomington, a co-chair of the event. In a steampunk world, organizers said, vehicles would run on steam, antiques would be repurposed instead of replaced, and teleportation would be a possibility. Krista Carver traveled with her daughter Rihanna from Washington, Missouri by train to immerse themselves in the style. The women wore bustled skirts and accessories adorned with chains and cogs as they browsed a market set up on downtown streets. For many, the costumes are the main appeal. Diane Sutliff of Chicago earned an award in the adult costume category for her handiwork. The skirt of her dress was made from several tablecloths. The bodice was a remodeled vest, and a leather belt acted as a catch-all for many vintage trinkets. Quote, everyone still has that innate childlike desire to dress up and pretend. This is a good excuse for people of all ages to have fun and know it's okay to be goofy, said Diane Sutliff, who is Kathy's sister, end quote. Having attended several larger steampunk events in the past, Diane Sutliff said the Bloomington Festival has a unique style because it is not held in an arena. Instead, it meshes with the historic feel of downtown Bloomington, with several events hosted inside the McLean County Museum of History. Because it's held outside, there are regular people mixing with the steampunk crowd. People who came to the farmers market to buy rutabagas didn't expect to see this, but it turned into a bigger, permeable connection with the community. A large crowd gathered to watch Carnival Epsilon performers, teapot racing, and a fashion show on the square. Downtown businesses opened their doors for crafts and events, including Red Raccoon Games, Half Hazard Press, and Inside Out Art. At the Stash Salon, co-owner Tammy Schmidgall judged a beard and mustache contest. Gary Boner and Nick McCarthy, both of Springfield, tied for their impressive whiskers. Boner drove a modified four-wheel bicycle through the streets. End of article. State mulls cannabis in place of opioids. Program would offer non-addictive option. Springfield. Illinois lawmakers have come up with an unusual solution to combat the opioid crisis. Allowing doctors to prescribe medical marijuana instead of opiates as a way to curb a growing epidemic. Doctors could choose to temporarily prescribe cannabis for patients who suffer from conditions traditionally treated with opioids. That plan, on the governor's desk, is meant to address a growing opioid crisis in the state. 11,000 people have died from opioid-related overdoses since 2008, according to the Illinois Department of Public Health. In 2016, opioid deaths were nearly double the number of fatal car crashes. This is a compassionate and common-sense approach to dealing with something we universally acknowledge is a problem, said Representative Kelly Cassidy, a Chicago Democrat who championed the legislation in the House. Cassidy added, the program is aimed at preventing more Illinoisans from becoming addicted to opioids by instead offering an alternative, non-addictive treatment for short-term conditions. If implemented, that program would be unique, according to national cannabis experts, and would expand Illinois' anemic medical marijuana market 10 times over. Chris Kane, former associate director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, said the program would put a real dent in the opioid crisis and could bring in badly needed revenue to a state drowning in billions of dollars of debt. Quote, there would be tremendous benefit to the state from an expansion in terms of jobs and taxes that come along with an industry expanding by more than 10 times its current size, said Crane, end quote, who is president of Forefront, a medical cannabis consultant company which also operates marijuana dispensaries in multiple states. That plan also eliminates some barriers to access of the state's restrictive medical marijuana program. It would remove requirements that patients undergo background checks and fingerprint scans, which critics argue disproportionately prevents lower income and minority communities from obtaining the drug. Drug law enforcement takes place more vigorously in lower-income communities and communities of color, Crane said, adding those who would benefit from medical cannabis often can't access it if they have prior convictions. Many of those convictions, he said, are for marijuana possession. While the plan was overwhelmingly bipartisan, it may run into trouble with Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, who has resisted expanded access to medical marijuana and enacted the restrictive program back in 2015. The governor's spokeswoman, Rachel Bolle, did not immediately reject the idea when it passed the Senate in April, saying that Governor Rauner is looking at any and all possible solutions to the opioid crisis. That answer came only after 2 months from when the Rauner administration decided to appeal a circuit court decision ordering the state to expand access to the drug for those diagnosed with chronic pain, a condition commonly treated with opioids. The proposed program is expected to give those with chronic pain access to medical marijuana, at least temporarily, which could prove a workaround to the governor's court fight. End of article. Divorces. The following divorces were recently finalized in McLean County Circuit Court. Kafwa Benjamin and Nidonanyel Tungu. Goodman, Sarah and Tyler Goodman. Mangler, Jessica and Justin Mangler. Hernandez, Alberto and Yara Palafox. Caruso, Jennifer and John Caruso. Glazebrook, Stephen and Diane Glazebrook. Kaunick, Dana and David Kaunick. Buccio, Lilia and Fortino Buccio. And Davis, Janet and Paul Davis. End of article. Teacher pay raise sparks concern. School leaders worry about a mandate for a $40,000 minimum. Bloomington, a state mandate which would increase starting teacher salaries to $40,000 each year, waits Governor Bruce Rauner's approval. But area school superintendents say it will take more than a raise to attract good teachers to Illinois and keep them here. If approved, that mandate would require minimum full-time teacher salaries to increase incrementally over the next 5 years, hitting the $40,000 mark for the 22-23 school year. Proponents of the bill, SB 2892, says the measure is a way to combat a growing teacher shortage in the state. But Guy Gradert, superintendent of Ridgeview Schools in Colfax, said the requirement is too high for most downstate districts. Ridgeview Schools will start new teachers with a bachelor's degree at $36,863 for the upcoming school year. Quote, I don't know if boosting the minimum salary fixes that problem of teacher shortages, said Gradert. Pay is important, but part of it is that society's view of the schoolhouse has changed. We expect so much more out of our teachers now. End quote. At Bloomington's District 87, the base teacher salary for 2018-19 is already set at $39,203, said Superintendent Barry Riley. We will have 3 years from that point to get to $40,000. That is realistic, but I don't think it's appropriate for the state to mandate salaries. I think they have good intention, but there's limitations in terms of revenues coming in to cover additional costs. At McLean County Unit 5 schools, the starting salary for a teacher in 2018-19 will be $37,000. Lindsay Dickinson, president of the Unit 5 Education Association, said the new state funding formula for schools is a step in the right direction. Teachers and educators are consistently asked to do more with less. A starting salary of $40,000 will help recognize the outstanding work members do for students, said Dickinson in an email. She said phasing in a new minimum salary would attract quality professionals to education. Gradert said teachers enter the field because of a passion for education, but are burdened with the task of offering social and emotional support to students while facing disrespect from society. The unfunded mandate would require districts to pull money from other revenue sources, said Gradert. It means the district budget would require tweaking. It depends on whether legislators put enough money in the funding formula to offset costs for taxpayers. Riley said he was concerned about wording in the bill, which would require future raises measured by the Consumer Price Index, compounded with local union bargaining. He agreed many local districts are seeing impacts of the state teacher shortage. As the pool shrinks, it will become a national crisis. It's not so much about salaries, it's about the profession itself and how it is treated across this country, said Riley. Olympia Superintendent Andrew Wise said the Stanford-based district has an incentive-based salary schedule with minimum teacher pay at $34,685 for the upcoming semester. Every time there's a mandate from the state, schools have to come up with that money. You either have to cut or find it elsewhere. Elsewhere for most of us is through taxes and fees. For school districts already bare-boned, it's difficult because cuts really hurt, he said. Wise said getting teacher salaries should remain local. Teachers are underpaid, but Springfield needs to stop trying to mandate and control everything with a one-size-fits-all plan. Let local boards of education make decisions on those things, said Wise. Kurt Nettles, superintendent of Clinton Schools, said the proposal prioritizes taking care of high-quality teachers. Beginning Clinton teachers will start at $36,150 this fall. I don't think beginning teachers make enough with the workload they are taking on, but mandating that from the state level on local entities is a bit of a reach, said Nettles. End of article. Road closures. Willow Street. The westbound lane of Willow Street between Fell and School Street and Normal is closed to traffic for sewer repairs, which started today. It will remain closed until repairs are complete, and that should be about 2 days, weather permitting. Mulberry Street. Mulberry Street from Linden Street to Constitution Trail Boulevard in Normal will be closed for sanitary sewer replacement. That started at 7 a.m. this morning. It is expected to return to one-lane traffic at 5 p.m. today, where traffic will be maintained in the south lane of Mulberry. That lane will be reopened for Illinois Special Olympic Summer Games weekend. Watkins Drive. Watkins Drive between Towanda Avenue and Mail Loop Road around the shops at College Hill and Normal will be closed to all traffic beginning Monday, today. The outside northbound lane of Towanda Avenue at Watkins will also be closed. Two-way traffic on Towanda will be maintained. That closure is required for the reconstruction of Watkins Drive. It is expected to last approximately 2 months. End of article. Setting it right, local budget. Bloomington District 87 will use additional state funding to reduce the district's deficit. How that money will be used was incorrect in a story last Friday. The Homes of Hope benefit car show was listed wrong in the May 27th Summer Fun Guide and Thursday's A&E calendar. That show will not be held this year. Today's flick fact, I'm sorry. I looked away while I was reading. Question. Using such metrics as access to bars and restaurants, athletics, culture, Greek life, and student polling data, the website Stacker has compiled a list of the top 50 collegiate party schools in America. Illinois is quite studious, apparently, as only one, Land of Lincoln College, made the list. Which one was it? The University of Illinois, Northwestern, Southern Illinois University, or Illinois State? Answer. It is the U of I, ranked number 10 in the U.S. as a party school, and also where St. Patrick's Day became such a raucous party event, administrators moved spring break to that week so students would not be around. End of article. Ex-minister pleads not guilty to child abuse. A Bloomington man pleaded not guilty last Friday to a 7-felony count indictment accusing him of breaking his infant daughter's legs and arm. Matthew Everly, 25, was in McLean County Circuit Court with defense lawyer Scott Cording for the brief arraignment hearing. Everly, who until recently served as associate pastor of worship at Eastview Christian Church in Normal, surrendered to police on May 21st and was released after posting a $25,035 bond. Charges accuse him of fracturing his infant daughter's left and right legs and her left arm by pulling the child's limb. The most serious charges are Class 10 felonies and carry a possible prison term of up to 60 years. He also is charged with felony reckless conduct and domestic battery, a misdemeanor. At this time, we will take a short break.